Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 1 through 25, which I will entitle Recap, the Wilderness Years. We are watching Moses give his farewell speech, or speeches. This is the first of three speeches he's going to give to the Israelites as they are camped in the plains of Moab. Our context is this. In the previous chapter, in Deuteronomy 1, we see Moses recounting how leaders were appointed when Israel was at Rephidim, right before they got to Mount Sinai. And then Moses talks about shortly thereafter, in the second year of the Exodus, that Israel refused to enter into the land and got banished because of their rebellion and had to wander for 38 years in the wilderness. And now here in chapter 2, he's going to recap what happened in the wilderness. So we start now with Deuteronomy 2, verses 1 through 6. Then we turned and set out for the wilderness. The then is after the belief of the spies' evil report about the land. And if you recall that story, the people decided they were going to not go into the land despite the fact that God told them to go into the land. And then when God rebuked for that and said, now you're going to have to retreat south of Edom and go back down to the Red Sea, the people rebelled again and they said, we're going to go into the land now. This was, again, against God's command, and they got their fannies whipped. So after that, then we turned and set out for the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea, as the Lord spoke to me, and circled Mount Seir for many days. And the Lord spoke to me, saying, you have circled this mountain long enough. Now turn north and command the people, saying, you will pass through the territory of your brothers, the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. So be very careful. Do not provoke them, for I will not give you any of their land, even as little as a footstep, because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession. You shall buy food from them with money so that you may eat, and you shall also purchase water from them with money so that you may drink. Now, when Moses said that they turned around and went to the Red Sea, he's talking about the Gulf of Aqaba, most probably, as the NIV Study Bible says. Again, the geography, there's the Arab Valley between the southern end of the Dead Sea all the way down to the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba. The Gulf of Aqaba is the easternmost gulf of the Red Sea. The westernmost gulf is the Gulf of Suez. In between those two gulfs is the Sinai Peninsula. This, again, is a recounting of what happened. They turned and set out for the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea. They're at Kadesh Barnea, which is in the desert lands between the Dead and the Red Sea, if you will, between the Gulf of Aqaba and the Dead Sea. The wilderness of Paran goes all the way from Mount Sinai up past the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, partway up that Arab Valley as you head to the Dead Sea, and then the wilderness of Zin starts there somewhere in the middle, and right around there somewhere is Kadesh Barnea, is where they are. That was where they had the unfortunate incident of the 10 unbelieving spies. So they turned out from Kadesh Barnea, and they went down the Arab Valley, went down to the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba. Now, they circled Mount Seir for many days as they did that. Now, other translations say differently. NIV says, we made our way around Mount Seir for many days. And the Holman Christian Study Bible says, we traveled around Mount Seir for many days. And that makes a lot more sense, because circled, as the NASB has, it sounds like there's one little mountain peak there and they went around in a circle. Well, that's not what they did. If you look at Mount Seir, you look down the Arab Valley from the Dead Sea to the Gulf of Aqaba. To the east of that valley is a mountain range. That's Mount Seir. And what they did is they went down the Gulf of Aqaba with Mount Seir on their east, on their left flank, as they headed south toward the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba. What they're doing is making an end run around the Edomites, because the Edomites controlled all of Mount Seir. And now some maps have the Edomites also spilling over the Arab Valley to the west a little ways, south of the Dead Sea. But wherever the Edomites were, the Israelites avoided them and went down south to Eilat, to the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, so they wouldn't be intercepted by the Edomites. Now, it says they wandered around, or made their way around, traveled around Mount Seir for many days. Some people say there's your 38 years of wandering in the wilderness right there, but some people don't. Jameson Fawcett Brown says that was the 38 years. But John Gill says, no, they wandered around in the wilderness up around Kadesh Barnea, and then at the end of the 38 years, they went down to Eilat. Who knows? We don't know. The text doesn't say. Now, at the end of verse 3, God told Moses, back again, this is back in the past, he says, okay, turn north. That means go from the southern border of Edom once you get all the way down around Mount Seir, around Edom, down there at the Gulf, at the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, go north now and go back up towards Canaan. Now, we've seen a little bit that they probably took the King's Highway, which is to the east of the, of Mount Seir, that range of mountains, and they went up that way. So that's what is being, that's what God's telling Israel to do there. And in verse 4, God tells Moses, you will pass through the territory of your brothers, the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. But God does not want Moses to take advantage of the terror of the Edomites. He's told them, you're not going to hurt them. You're going to buy your food and your water, as we see in verse 6. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say about this, quote, the same people who had haughtily repelled the approach of the Israelites from the western frontier were alarmed now that they had come around upon the weak side of their country on the east. Remember, we ought to mention that in a previous chapter, maybe it was in Numbers, I can't remember, but when Moses was at Kadesh Barnea, he wanted to go straight west. He wanted to go straight north on the western side of the Dead Sea, right on through. He's at Kadesh Barnea, which is right south of the Promised Land, and the Edomites control that area, and he wanted to go through, and the Edomites says, oh no, you're not going through. So Moses says, okay, we'll go around, well, God said. And so they went south and back north, and they're heading up the east side of Edom now. Now in verse 5, God told Moses back in the past, whether it's 38 years in the past or whether it's just a couple months in the past, I will not give you any of their land, even as little as a footstep, because I have given Mount Seir to Edom as a possession. So we see here that Edom is to be bypassed. Later on, we're going to see that Moab and Ammon are going to be bypassed. Three pagan countries opposed to God, opposed to Israel. All throughout the history, they hated Israel. Why did God tell them to leave them alone, go around them? Well, it has been speculated by some that it's because of their blood relationship to Israel. Edom came from Esau. Remember, Isaac, Jacob, and Esau. Jacob and Esau were brothers. They were Israelites. They were related to the chosen race. That's Edom. And then later, as they get past Edom, they head north. They're going to run into Moab and then Ammon north of that. Well, Moab and Ammon were sons of Lot through his incest with his daughters, if you recall. After Sodom and Gomorrah, the disaster there, Lot fled with his two daughters into a cave. The daughters got him drunk. They had sex with him. It's disgusting to even talk about, but they had sex with him, and then they had kids. And the oldest daughter had a kid who was Moab, and the youngest daughter had a kid whose name was Ammon, and that's where Moab and Ammon came from. But they were related to the promised people, the chosen people, and so that's why, according to the NIV Study Bible, that is why Moab was to pass these three countries without taking any of their land. Now here's some scripture showing that God gave land to Moab and Ammon too. Deuteronomy 2:9. Then the Lord said to me, do not harass Moab nor provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I have given Ar, that's the capital of Moab, I have given Ar to the sons of Lot as a possession. Deuteronomy 2:19, when you come opposite the sons of Ammon, do not harass them nor provoke them, for I will not give you any of the land of the sons of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the sons of Lot as a possession. For whatever God's reasons were, he had given Edom, Moab, and Ammon to them, to the people that lived there, and Israel was not to get them. So Moses acted in accordance with those commands. Now, in verse 6, he's told to buy food. Of course, that was in addition to manna. They were still using manna. But they would buy more food, and of course, they were buying food instead of taking food. That's why God told them to do that, because taking food would be an act of war, and God did not want them to fight Edom. We go now to Deuteronomy 2, verses 7 and 8. For the Lord your God has blessed you, God continues to tell Moses. For the Lord your God has blessed you in all that you have done. He has known your wanderings through this great wilderness. These 40 years the Lord your God has been with you, you have not lacked a thing. So we passed beyond our brothers, the sons of Esau who live in Seir, away from the Araba road, away from Eilat and from Ezion-Geber. And we turned and passed through by the way of the wilderness of Moab. Now in verse 7, God is still saying, is that God or is that Moses? According to the NASB punctuation, that's still God talking. For the Lord your God has blessed you in all that you've done. Even in punishment, God is always with his people. He blessed them despite the fact he had to punish them, chastise them severely through their many adventures in the wilderness. He has known your wanderings through this great wilderness. and the wanderings themselves were a punishment for their sin. These 40 years the Lord your God has been with you, you have not lacked a thing. Now that 40 years includes 2 years when they weren't wandering and 38 plus years when they were wandering. It took them 1 year to get to Sinai, and they built the tabernacle between the 9th month and the 12th month. And in the second year, they had 2 months taken up with having Passovers and setting up the ordination of the priest and setting up the tabernacle ritual and so forth. And then in the second month, the 20th, they set out on their journey to try to get to the promised land. So that's roughly 2 months. And then they had to send spies out. That took 40 days. All right, that's another month. So that's 4 months. The next 8 months, we don't know. They had some activities they had to do. They had the quail incident, the Taberah incident. They had certain things that happened, but it doesn't say exactly how long they took. So somewhere in that 8 months, let's just say a couple more months. So let's say a half a year in Kadesh Barnea. So 38 plus 6 years from Kadesh Barnea wandering around. So 40 years is a round number. It's easy just to say, okay, it's 38 plus years of wandering. If you want to be a little bit more precise, we can't be perfectly precise. But 40 years, of course, is a round number. Besides, from the time they left Egypt, it was 40 years. But here they're talking about the wanderings in the wilderness. Now, verse 8, it says, so we passed beyond our brothers, the sons of Esau. That's because they're heading south now. They're passing Mount Seir on the other side of the Araba Valley to the east, and they're heading south down to Eilat. And then it says they passed beyond the sons of Esau who live in Seir, away from the Araba road, away from Eilat and from Ezion-Geber, and we turned and passed through by the way of the wilderness of Moab. Now, the way I take this is that there's a road down the Araba Valley between the Dead Sea and the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba. But they turned away from that road, away from Eilat, away from Ezion-Geber, the two cities that are at the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba. They turned away from that road and went to the east till they got onto the King's Highway, and then they went up to the wilderness of Moab, which is north as far as the Dead Sea. I failed to mention something, but let me back up to verse 7. God tells the Israelites, you have not lacked a thing. That's obvious because they had money to pay the Edomites. In verses 28 and 29, we'll read this. You will sell me food for money so that I may eat, and give me water for money so that I may drink. Only let me pass through on foot. This is Moses dealing with the Edomites. So they had money. They had money to buy food and water. So they weren't lacking for anything if they had money to do that, even after wandering in the wilderness for 38 years. Now let's talk about this Araba road that they turned away from. The NIV Study Bible says it ran from the head of the Gulf of Aqaba northward to the east of Moab. Well, that would be the King's Highway. So maybe the Araba Road is the same thing as the Araba Road. But the NIV says we turn from the Araba Road, which comes up from Eilat and Ezion-Geber. Well, that sounds like maybe it's the same road, but I don't think so. I mean, the Araba Road could go straight up the Araba Valley, and then the King's Highway could be different. I'm speculating on this. I don't know. Well, actually, I stopped to check it out. Found a website called Biblical Archaeology. They have a satellite photo superimposed with text from www.bible.ca, and it has the Araba Road running straight up from the Gulf of Aqaba to the Dead Sea. I do know that the Holman Christian Study Bible says we turned away from the Araba Road, which sounds like they went further east to get on the King's Highway, and the Araba Road went due north. But at any rate, that's a minor geographical detail. They're heading north to Moab. Two cities are mentioned there at the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, Eilat, which is still there. I've actually spent the night in Eilat. It's part of it's at the very southern tip of the nation of Israel. Ezion-Geber, according to my BibleAtlas.org map, is a little bit south on the western tip of the Gulf of Aqaba. But it's got a question mark by it, so the archaeologists aren't exactly sure where it is, but it's somewhere near Eilat. It was famous because it was Solomon's famous port. That's how he got out to the outward world, into the Indian Ocean, through Ezion-Geber as he did his worldwide trade. We go down to Deuteronomy 2, verse 9. Then the Lord said to me, do not harass Moab, nor provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I have given Ar to the sons of Lot as a possession. Now, Ar is not known. The location of it is not known according to the NIV Study Bible. The BibleAtlas.org also says that. But the BibleAtlas.org map shows Ar at the south of the Arnon River, about halfway east and west through the territory of Moab. So that's where I'm going to take it to be, since that's where they think it is. That was the capital of Moab. That's the most important thing to remember. So you hear Ar, it means Moab. Jameson Fossen Brown says this, Ar, called in later times Rabbah, was the capital of Moab and situated 25 miles south of the Arnon on the banks of a small but shady stream, the Beni Hammed. So Jameson Fossen Brown, they seem to think they know exactly where it is. Well, I'm not going to argue with the scholars on that. But the point here is that Moab was given to the sons of Lot, the descendants of Lot. And of course, that came from Lot's firstborn daughter who had incest with Lot, Genesis 19:37. The firstborn, that's the firstborn daughter, gave birth to a son and named him Moab. He is the father of the Moabites of today. So again, Esau was related to the Israelites. Moab was related to the Israelites. And so God, at least we speculate, that God gave these lands to the descendants of these people, Esau and Lot, and therefore Israel was to leave them alone. I mean, after all, it says in verse 9, do not harass Moab because I have given Ar to the sons of Lot as possession. Doesn't say why God did it, but he says, I did do it, so therefore leave them alone. Now, Moab owned that land, which of course is east of the Dead Sea, roughly. Moab owned that land until the time of David, and then they became tributaries to David, who was king of Israel, and the Edomites did also. This is according to John Gill. We read this in 2 Samuel 8:2. He, that's David, defeated Moab and measured them with the line, making them lie down on the ground. And he measured two lines to put to death and one full line to keep alive. Decimation, I think that's what they call that in military history. It's awful. And the Moabites became servants to David, bringing tribute. So, yeah, they got the land, but they didn't have it. It didn't last forever. We go now to Deuteronomy 2, verses 10 through 12. The Emmon lived there. This is lived in Moab formerly. A people as great, numerous, and tall as the Anakim. Like the Anakim, they are also regarded as Rephaim, but the Moabites call them Emmon. Well, let's just stop there for a minute. The best way to remember all this is there's a bunch of names for giants, and the names change according to where the giants are found. The Emmon, the Anakim, and the Rephaim. Do you hear one of those three terms? Think giants. Giants. Emmon, Anakim, and Rephaim. The NIV for the Emmon has the Emites. They like that word, ites. They like that ending, ites. The word itself possibly means terrors. Here's what Adam Clark says about the Emmon, quoting another commentator named Calmet. Calmet supposes that these people were destroyed in the war made against them by Chedorlaomer and his allies in Genesis 14:5. Lot possessed their country after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, that's interesting. I don't know what I think about that. Here's what Clark says. It appears that the Emmon, the Anakim, and the Rephaim were probably the same people called by different names in the different countries where they dwell. And that's, like I said, that's the easiest way to look at it. Now, who were these Anakim, also known as Rephaim, also known as Emmon? They were aborigines. They were the earlier inhabitants of Canaan, as the NIV Study Bible says. And they were giants, as the NIV Study Bible says. Now, they're mentioned a lot. Let me read you some scriptures in Deuteronomy and Numbers. Deuteronomy 2:10. The Emmon lived there formerly, a people as great, numerous, and tall as the Anakim. Actually, that's the verse we're on now. Deuteronomy 2:21, which we'll get to in a minute, a people as great, numerous, and tall as the Anakim. Deuteronomy 9:2, a people great and tall, the sons of the Anakim. Who could stand before the sons of Anak? Numbers 13:22. When they had gone up into the Negev, they came to Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were. That's Caleb's allotted territory. He had to knock out some giants to take it. So there we have a lot of mentions of the Anakim. A lot of mention of the Anakim. Numbers 13:32, so they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. Well, that would be the Anakim, although the name is not mentioned there. Here's a little excerpt from Easton's Illustrated Dictionary. They dwelt in the south of Palestine in the neighborhood of Hebron. We already know that. I just read that verse. In the days of Abraham, they inhabited the region afterwards known as Edom and Moab. Well, that's because now, several hundred years after Abraham, we're at the time of Moses, they're still there. They were probably a remnant of the original inhabitants of Palestine before the Canaanites. And that's the main thing to remember. These people were giants, aboriginal giants in the land before the Canaanites got there. Under Rephaim, Easton's Illustrated Dictionary says that they were the aborigines of Palestine, afterwards conquered and dispossessed by the Canaanite tribes. They're classed under this general title of Rephaites. They were known to the Moabites as Emim, i.e. fearful, and to the Ammonites as Amzumin, which we'll see in just a minute. Some of them found refuge among the Philistines and were still existing in the days of David. Remember David and Goliath? Giants? We know nothing of their origin, and, Easton points out, they are not necessarily connected with the giants of Genesis 6:4 when the sons of God came down with the Nephilim, in other words, as the RV most translations have it as Nephilim, actually. These Nephilim are not necessarily connected with the Rephaim. Might be, but not necessarily. And the Horites are mentioned in verse 12. This is all a parenthetical remark, by the way, just telling Moses is just mentioning all the people that they had to deal with when they got to Moab. Verse 12, he says, the Horites formerly lived in Seir, but the sons of Esau dispossessed them and destroyed them, just as Israel did in the land of their possession. So now we're going to have some examples of people getting dispossessed from their land as a sample of what Israel is going to do when they dispossess people from the land that Israel's taking over. Well, the Horites were the aboriginal people in the land of Edom, right along Mount Seir there, and Esau drove them out. Here's what Easton says about the Horites. Quote, they were cavemen, a race of troglodytes who dwelt in the limestone caves which abounded in Edom. Their ancestor was Seir, who probably gave his name to the district where he lived. They were a branch of the Hivites, one of the pagan tribes, Canaanite tribes. They were dispossessed by the descendants of Esau, and as a people gradually became extinct. Now, you recall there's a Mount Hor named after the Horites. That's it. They don't know exactly where that mountain was, but it's either the south or the southeast of the Dead Sea, and it probably got its name from the Horites. Mount Hor is where Aaron died, if you will recall. Now, in verse 12, this dispossession of the Horites from Edom, from the land of Esau, was just as Israel did to the land of their possession, which the Lord gave to them. What land is being referred to? Well, we have some options here. Let's just assume it's talking about the lands on the eastern side of the Jordan River, the Transjordan, because that's what's being talked about here as they go up and they, while Moses is still alive, and they take the lands of Moab and Ammon, and also the Amorite kings, Og and Sihon. And that's the easiest way to take that, the lands of their possession, just as Israel did to the land of their possession. Now, you could say, well, Israel did to the land of the Edomites' possession, but no, Israel wouldn't do that because they were told not to do that. So the there has to refer to Israel. So just as Israel did to the land of Israel's possession, they got rid of the aboriginal inhabitants. Well, you could say that refers to the land of Canaan, but the problem with that is Moses didn't. He's referring to something that's already happened, just as Israel did to the land of their possession. Hasn't happened yet while he's written this, because he dies before they get into the land of Canaan to dispossess the original inhabitants. Now, you could get around that by saying, well, somebody editorialized and changed Moses' writing, or you could say Moses had a prophecy and he just knew in advance that they were going to take over, but I don't think that's necessary. I don't think that's wise to do that. I think it's easier just to say the land of their possession was the Transjordan, which Moses took while he was alive, and that saves a lot of trouble there in interpreting that verse. We go now to Deuteronomy 2:13. God continues speaking to Moses, now arise and cross over the brook Zered yourselves. So he crossed over the brook Zered. Now Zered is the stream that runs from east to west, right through the southern border of Moab until it gets to the Arabah Valley. And in fact, until it kind of takes a little northern turn when it gets to the Arabah Valley and goes into the southern end of the Dead Sea. So this is easy to remember. It's the southern boundary of Moab and goes into the southern end of the Dead Sea. NIV Study Bible says that it's an intermittent stream, dried up in the dry season. We go now to Deuteronomy 2:14-19. And by the way, crossing over the brook Zered is not just talking about crossing a brook. It means crossing over into Moab, or at least to the eastern side of Moab. And so that was a big deal. Things are going to start getting interesting now. We'll start encountering some opposition. So we go now to Deuteronomy 2, verses 14-19. The time we spent traveling from Kadesh Barnea until we crossed the Zered Valley was 38 years. Now, I've already talked about it, 38 years. That's the wandering in the wilderness, and it's a round number. It's 38 years plus several months, but it's rounded off. That time was 38 years until the entire generation of fighting men had perished from the camp. It's interesting that the 38 years is measured to the entry into Moab. I mean, it took a little while to fight Moab, to almost get seduced by the Moab's allies, the Midianite women. And then they had to actually fight a war against the Midianites. So that took a while. But again, we're just looking in round numbers here. 38 years. That time was 38 years until the entire generation of fighting men had perished from the camp, as the Lord had sworn to them. Indeed, the Lord's hand was against them to eliminate them from the camp until they had all perished. When all the fighting men had died among the people, the Lord spoke to me, "Today you're going to cross the border of Moab at Ar. When you get close to the Ammonites, don't show any hostility to them or fight with them, for I will not give you any of the Ammonites' land as a possession. I have given it as a possession to the descendants of Lot." So that's the same thing as I said, Esau, Ammon, and Lot. Israel's not to touch their land. Now, why was the Lord's hand against the Israelites, against the entire generation of fighting men? In other words, the people at the time of the census who were 20 years or older. Why were they eliminated? Why had they all perished? Why had their corpses fallen in the sand? Well, it's because they had not gone and taken the promised land 38 years before at Kadesh Barnea like they were supposed to. And so God says, okay, you don't want to go. You don't want to go in. You're not going to go in. You're going to die in the wilderness. Now, how had these soldiers died off? Well, you know, some of them could have died of natural causes, I guess. You're talking about 38 years from the time there. Let's say you're 40 years old at the time of the census, and then another 38 years. Well, that's 78 years old. That's getting up there. So some people, I'm sure, just died from natural causes, but there was also a plague. It shit them in the plains of Moab. That was the Baal Peor incident. Remember when Phinehas stabbed the Midianite woman who was having sex? Her name was Cosby, and she was having sex with an Israeli prince named Zimri. Bam, Phinehas goes in there and stabs him like a shish kebab. 24,000 people had died up until that point. The plague was spreading everywhere, and Phinehas decides he's going to get rid of the cause of the plague, namely this idolatry. And then, of course, there was the destruction of Korah and his rebels when the big fire ate him up. Some of his allies got eaten up when the earth opened up and swallowed him. So there was lots of things going on that were killing off the soldiers, and so all the people under 20 are gone now before they even enter Moab. Not before they enter Israel, but before they even enter Moab, they're gone. Now, when I say all, in fact, it says all. It says entire. The entire generation of fighting men had perished. Well, that's not strictly literally true, because Joshua and Caleb survived, because I'm assuming they were over 20 at the time of the census. I'm sure they were. But, of course, they didn't bring a bad report. They brought a good report. They said, let's follow the Lord's command and go in and take Israel. But nobody listened to them. We go now to Deuteronomy 2, verses 20 through 22. Here's another parenthesis. A parenthesis. It is also regarded as a land of the Rephaim. This, again, is talking about Ammon. I didn't mention where Ammon was. Moab goes from the brook Zered, the southern end of the Dead Sea, to the northern tip of the Dead Sea. That's roughly Moab. And then Ammon is beyond that, from the northern tip of the Dead Sea, where the city of Heshbon was, the Moabite city. And you keep going till you get to the Jabbok River, which is going north. It's halfway up. It runs from east to west, intersects the Jordan River about, let's just say, well, it's maybe 40% up the valley before you get to the Dead Sea, part way up. That's Ammon. And so we've got a little parenthetical remark about Ammon. It is also regarded as the land of the Rephaim, for Rephaim formerly lived in it, but the Ammonites call them Zamzumin. So here's another name. We got Rephaim, Anakim, Ammon, and now the Zamzumin. Just remember, giants. A people as great, numerous, and tall as the Anakim, but the Lord destroyed them before them. And they dispossessed them and settled in their place, just as he did for the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites from before them. They dispossessed them and settled in their place even to this day. So once again, the tribe of Esau, the Edomites, are the poster boys for kicking out Aboriginal people. And just like Esau kicked out the Horites in Seir, Likewise, the Ammonites kicked out the Rephaim, or the Zanzumen as they called them, kicked them out of Ammon and settled in their place. Again, all of this is to say these people dispossessed people who were there before them, and now the Israelites are doing the same thing, except the Israelites are only going to do it when they cross, well, they're going to do have 2.5 tribes to the east of the Jordan River in the Transjordan area, and then they're going to go to the Cisjordan area, the western side of the Jordan River, and they're going to dispossess some Canaanites. So again, I guess Moses or God is trying to show a pattern of how people do not own the land permanently. They get dispossessed. The word Zanzumen that's mentioned here, these giants in Ammon, the word possibly means murmurers, possibly, and it possibly, the word possibly can be identified with the Zuzites, who are of Genesis 14:5. I'm sure we went over that when I was going over Genesis 14:5, but I don't remember the Zuzites. Clark says, quote, of these ancient people, the Zanzumen, we know very little. They were probably inconsiderable tribes or clans, pursuing and pursued each other's prey, till at length a stronger totally destroyed or subdued them, and their name became either extinct or absorbed in that of their conquerors. We go now to Deuteronomy 2:23, and we see what can seem to be a strange verse. And the Avim, who lived in villages as far as Gaza, the Kaphtorim, who came from Kaphtor, destroyed them and lived in their place. Now here we have a verse about the Kaphtorim destroying the Avim. Well, who were they? Well, the Avim were a pre-Philistine people, otherwise unknown. We see them mentioned in Joshua 13:3, where the five lords of the Philistines are mentioned, the Gazite, the Ashdodite, the Ashkelonite, the Gittite, and the Ekronite. Those are the five famous cities of Philistine there on the southwestern border of Israel on the Mediterranean, near the Mediterranean Sea. And then after those five lords are mentioned, and the Avite, he just kind of mentions them there. Here's what Easton says about the Avim, a people dwelling in Hazarim, or the villages or encampments on the southwest corner of the seacoast. They were subdued and driven northward by the Kaphtorim. The Kaphtorim were probably the Philistines. Just right now, we'll take them to be the Philistines. A trace of them is afterwards found in Joshua 13:3, the verse I just read, where they are called Avites. Now, Kylan Delitzsch says they are mentioned here as an analogy to the Horites who were driven out of Edom. Remember I said Edom was the poster child for driving out aboriginals? Well, the Philistines drove out their aboriginals, the Avim, and that happened on the southwest coast of Israel. And my question is, why bring up something that happened way over there in the southwest of Israel? That's not anywhere near where Moses is now. He's in Moab, in the plains of Moab. Well, he's getting ready to cross the brook Zered at the southern end of Moab. Why in the world bring up something on the other side of Israel toward the Mediterranean Sea? Well, the answer to that is that this just continues the analogy. It's the end of the parenthesis. The parenthesis started in verse 20, and it was talking about the Edomites drove out their aboriginals, the Horites, just like the Ammonites drove out their aboriginals, the Zamzumin, and likewise, the Philistines, the Kaphtorim, drove out their aboriginals, the Avim. And so that's sort of the theme, is driving out aboriginals. Now, why in the world that is put in here, I don't know. It's a parenthetical remark. It might just be an historical notation so that we can know what happened and who it happened to. It could be referring to the fact that just as these people drove out their aboriginal people, so the Israelites are getting ready to do the same thing to theirs. All right, I said the Kaphtorim were probably the Philistines. Let's look at that a little closer. Here's some excerpts from Easton's Illustrated Dictionary. The name Kaphtorim is found written in hieroglyphics in the temple of Kom Ombos in Upper Egypt, but the exact situation of Kaphtor is unknown, though it is supposed to be Crete, since the Philistines seem to be meant by the Cherethites in 1 Samuel 30:14. So we've got speculation on top of speculation that Cherethites somehow refers to Crete, and the Philistines are maybe the Cherethites. But you read this enough, they're the Philistines. I mean, as far as you can know anything about ancient history. Easton says the term Kaphtor may, however, have been a part of Egypt, the Kaphtor in the North Delta. Well, speculate all you want. I found some commentator, unfortunately I didn't write his name down, says this, quote, Crete, known as Kaftor in ancient times, was for a while the homeland of various Philistine groups. So they show absolutely no doubt that Kaftor was in Crete, and that's where the Philistines came from, and that sort of seems to be the majority opinion there. Now, the Avim were destroyed by the Philistines, or the Kaftorim, but not utterly, as John Gill points out. Some escaped into Assyria. 2 Kings 17:24, the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cuthah and from Ava and from Hamath and Sepharvaim and settled them in the cities of Samaria in the place of the sons of Israel. That's when, after 722 BC, when the Assyrians wiped out the northern kingdom, they got some inhabitants from Ava to replace the Jews who went into exile, so there must have been some still around. That's all we know about the Avites. Minor historical details here. We go now to Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 24 through 25, and we'll finish this audio. God continues to speak to Moses. Again, this is a recollection, a recap. Moses is talking about what God had told him in the past, right there at the border of the southern border of Moab. Arise, set out, and pass through the valley of Arnon. The Arnon River runs east to west, about halfway up the Dead Sea. Pass through that valley, that's right in the middle of Moab, except there to the east of Moab, in the desert there, on the desert road, the king's highway. Look, I've given Sihon, the Amorite king of Heshbon, and his land into your hand. Begin to take possession and contend with him in battle. This day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you upon the peoples everywhere under the heavens, who, when they hear the report of you, will tremble and be in anguish because of you. Now that's an encouraging word. Notice how God says, look, I have given Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, into your hand. This is before it had actually been done, but in God's mind, it's already done, it's over, it's past. He's going to be conquered by you. Heshbon is the city right to the north of the Dead Sea, and to the east, north, and east of the northern tip of the Dead Sea. That's, of course, the capital of Moab. Now, I've talked about Moab and Ammon. Who are these Amorites? Well, before the Israelites got there, they had encroached upon the lands of Moab and Ammon, and so the Israelites had to take them out. And Heshbon had been taken over by Sihon. Sihon's an Amorite, not a Moabite, so that's why it says Sihon the Amorite. So we're not going to fight the Moabites because God gave them a possession there, but Sihon's an Amorite, and so he's fair game. Now Moses had sent a pacific message, a peaceful message, to Sihon earlier. He had requested permission to go through the Amorite territory on the east of Jordan, that they had taken from the Moabites. Sihon refused, Numbers 21:23. But Sihon would not permit Israel to pass through his border. So Sihon gathered all his people and went out against Israel in the wilderness and came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. Jahaz, if I remember correctly, is sort of to the east of Moab, sort of out there in the desert. But at any rate, Sihon had its chance to just let Israel go by peacefully. Oh, no, they made a bad career decision there. They said, no, Israel, you're not going to pass. We don't trust you. There's too many of you, 600,000 soldiers. Oh, that's too much. And so Israel took them out. Well, we will leave the story here, and we'll see how Israel took out Sihon, king of Heshbon, in our next audio in verses 26 through 37, and we'll finish up chapter 2, and we will look at the defeat of King Sihon. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.